Boker Tov, everybody. Nice to see everybody. Class 70, I guess. Have to have a L'chaim or something. ongoing series on a closer look at the Seder. So I want to again thank everybody for coming, for allowing me to, or allowing and forcing me to prepare these shiurim so I can learn so much. So it's really in your merit that I can these shiurim, and thank you. Okay, so we'll start. Last week, Zev was, I don't know, bothering me, but it was hounding me on the difference between Bore and Yotzer, right? Asher, how's the bracha start? Yotzer or Bore Choshech, what's the difference between Yitzira and Briah? So we'll spend just a few minutes on that. So Yotzer means, Bore means to create. Bore means to create, Yotzer means to form. In other words, Bore is Yesh Me'ayin, Ex Nihilo, as we say, you know, something from nothing. And Yotzer is once something is created, then you have to form it into a usable form. So let's just, so for example, Yotzer or. So that doesn't make sense because God, didn't he create light from nothing? So Rav Yaakov Emden, who we'll get to a little bit later today, Rav Yaakov Emden says no, because the or was an emanation of God. In other words, ooh, God, it consists, I don't know what this means exactly, but you can understand it some allegorical way, that God is the God of light, or so to speak, God radiates light, the Eish Ochla. That's what the Gemara says. God is like a burning fire. It says you get close to God. And when you get close to God, you'll get burned alive. So you follow his midot. He's right. He clothes the naked. You clothes the naked. He feeds the poor. That's the Gemara in Sota that we did a few weeks ago. He's an Eish Ochla. So he says the fire wasn't really a new creation. The fire was just a formation of this element. Okay. So now, and that's probably why we say, Yotzer, Asher Yatsar et Hadam Bechachma. That's the bracha when you go to the washroom, Barchat Hashem Asher Yatsar et Hadam Bechachma, because man is created B'Tselem Elohim. We're kind of an emanation from God. So again, it's not a creation. That's what it would appear. Yesh Me'ayin. It's not out of nothing. It's sort of, it's, I don't exactly know what I'm saying, but we're created as an element of God, which is really what it says. I say all the time, it's a little bit heretical that man is created in the image of God. We're like God. We're a piece of God in all of us. So therefore we say Asher Yatsar et Adam. We don't say Bore. And therefore we say at a wedding, Asher Yatsar et Adam Bitsalmo. We say it black and white. God created us in his image. So that's why we would use the word Yatsar. Okay, so somebody should please attack me now. How should somebody attack me now? That I don't make any sense. What I just said doesn't make sense. I mean, maybe it makes sense, but we have a problem with what I said. What's the problem? I'm sorry. The problem is that the word Vayivra appears three times, I believe, in the first chapter in creation. So let's take a quick look. And maybe I'll ask before three times the word Vayivra.
It says Vayivra et Adam.
There you go. Vayivra
et Bereshit Bara'alohim. It's not Vayivsor et Adam.
Yeah, Vayivra et Adam. Yeah, Vayivra et
Adam. So how can you say, how can you
correct. Just, how can I just say what I said? But we do say Asher Yatsar et Adam b'chokmah. We do say Asher Yatsar et Adam b'tzamo. That man was formed. Man was created. You think of everything man was created the most. So, right. So that we have, begin Bereshit bara Elohim, the beginning of creation. So where, by the way, this is very interesting. Where's the third time it says Bria? I'm going to share my screen for half a second. There are three times, I believe, in chapter one where it says, everybody see it? Okay. So you got Bereshit bara Elohim, but,
is it the tiny name?
Very good. So on day five, let's go here. So the Vayivra, that's man already. Vayivra Elohim et Hataninim. Now we don't know who the Tanin, the Tanin Golim is sort of a mystical. We're very unclear who they are. Some people, I think some people claim other with no good evidence that these are the dinosaurs, but whatever it is. Vayivra Elohim
et Hataninim. I think they say that the Taninim are, I think it's Kasuto, if I'm not sure. That this was a polemic against those great forces that were, yeah.
The big sea monsters and fighting.
Exactly, that the other nations had thought were the creative, the and, primordial great gods or something. You know,
in other traditions, creation was sort of a fight between the gods. It was much more chaotic.
Exactly.
It wasn't order.
So the Torah creation comes right and tells you.
So I'm not
sure
why you say, but. Vayivra, that doesn't necessarily explain Vayivra. In other words, it's sort of Yeshua Yain. And then we have, of course, anyways, Vayivra Elohim et Adam. So what is it now?
Rabbi Jay, could be the Vayivra is the total, and Vayetzer is the little details in our body or on the body itself.
Yeah.
So here, there you go. I just highlighting it. You see on the screen, Perek Beit, Pasuk 7, Vayitzer Elohim et Adam. So you have Vayivra in chapter 1 and Vayitzer, you know, Yatzar in chapter 2. Now, we don't have to discuss Rav Soloveitchik's Lonely Man of Faith and, you know, what is the relationship between the creation story in chapter 1 and creation story in chapter 2, which are contradictory. So that's, of course, the basis of Rabbi Soloveitchik's beautiful piece, The Lonely Man of Faith, which if you haven't read, I highly recommend you read. It's not that long. Maybe, I don't know, 90 pages. Not, you just don't read it when you're half asleep and, you know, when you're watching television and the news. You have to focus. But you know, two different aspects of man. But what I thought, you have both aspects of Vayivra and Vayitzer. So I thought perhaps.
Rabbi Kalman?
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe the Vayivra is regarding man's physical body because he's getting the dust from all corners of the earth, and that was Yesh Me'ayin because God has no physicality. But the Vayetzer, when God put his spirit, so to speak, into us, that may have been Yetzirah because it was the emanation.
Right, so go to it. So very good. I was going to say along the same lines. When we were created, Vayivra, we were created Yesh Me'ayin. However, a man was created. I mean, that's, we created from the dust of the earth, evolution. We evolved from, according to the Torah, we evolved from dust of the earth. But, so that man, I would say, was an animal. Rav Soloveitchik writes in, The Emergence of Ethical Man, you know, after the Rav, he passed away. So I don't think they do the books anymore. I don't know if they're all finished. There's no manuscripts left but I don't think for many years now. But in the years after the Rav, you know, passed away, there are about 10, 11 volumes. I have them here in the back. Me'otzar HaRav, you know, series. These were basically handwritten manuscripts from Soloveitchik. He didn't prepare them for publication, which means it's not exactly the same thing. Obviously, when you prepare your own, it's a little bit different. But obviously, people went in and they read it and they listened to tapes of what he said. So when they put out, the first one was on prayer act. First one was on prayer, worship of the heart, and they have on the family, and that's the letters that now that Mark Shapiro's class on the letters. So Natty Help got put out that first volume, very interesting letters of the Rav. So one of the books is The Emergence of Ethical Man. And in there, the Rav talks about, he has no problem with evolution. In other words, as long as if biologically there's no issue with evolution, but ontological, whatever the word is, but conceptually, in other words, man, we can't just say we're random. We may have been created that way, but God added the image of God into all of us, and we're not just another animal. We're biologically just another animal, but that's not our essence of our being. So I would argue that basically we were created as animals. And then Vayivra, we were created Yesh Me'ayin. And then Vayetzer, God put in, he formed us into being his image. That's it. Like chapter 2 is sort of, that's how Rashi assumes that chapter 2 is a continuation, or it's an explanation of chapter 1. Chapter 1 gives the basics. God created man and woman together. And what I mean, but in chapter 2, he put man to sleep and he took from his bone from his body. So that's just explaining. In chapter 1, we just give the basic things. Chapter 2 explains it. That's so it could be that. I don't know. I just pointed out. It's interesting because our brachot say asher yatzar et Adam. We say that bracha many times a day. And yet, Vayivra, that's what it says. Of course, we assume Yesh Me'ayin. So I think perhaps we can give this idea. I don't know, but we were created Yesh Me'ayin as animals biologically. But of course, the Tzelem Elohim, that's the form. That's God, the Yatzar form. And it's kind of, I don't know why, it reminded me of, let's see if I have it right here. I'm sure. All right, I don't see it. Gerald Schroeder. I don't know what's, Is he still, you know, living? Does anybody know? George Schroeder was a yes. professor at MIT and yes. Non-observant professor at MIT and a physicist, and he wrote the book, you know, Genesis and the Big Bang. So he has another book. I forget now what it's called. I'm sure I have it, but I don't want to spend time looking for it. Mind that he talks of he admits this is a little bit wild, and some people told him he shouldn't write this, but he felt he should write it. And he says, let's see if we can take a look in the Torah. Let's just quickly go back to our screen and say how the Torah writes it in chapter one. So he claims like this, Vayivra, what does it say? Vayomer Elohim naseh Adam, let us make man, Bitzalmenu. And in Pasuk 27, it's Ha'adam, the man. And he says that basically, he's a big scientist. So he accepts, of course, the basis of evolution. And he said that basically what it is there were lots of human beings when man was there. I don't know what's after the Neanderthals, before humans. I'm sorry, I forget my science. But who he came for just below us, they all existed. They had human form. They looked like humans. The difference was they didn't have a Tzelem Elohim. In other words, people evolved over time. And then you had a whole world, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. And then at some point, God took Adam, this animal creature, and made him Hada, made him Bitzelem Elohim. And that's, of course, the difference. But on physical features, it was the same. No, you can take this. So he thought that was, of course, he can understand why people wouldn't be so happy. I don't know, when he read it, he didn't get attacked. Maybe people didn't read it as much as they did Rabbi Slifkin's books. You know, like, you know, if your books are too famous and people start reading it, then you can get attacked. I don't know the story. But anyway, I just wanted to point that out. So Zev, that there is, of course, a difference between Yatsar and Bara, or Yesh Me'ayin, but that's uncommon. Only the three times. We'll have to leave for another time. Why the Taninim? I didn't really look into it now. And why it says Vayivra by the Taninim Hagdolim. Okay.
Rabbi
Kelman, yes. Good morning. Yes. This is Jimmy Sokolow.
Hi.
To get back to the problem that you raised previously, that you're uncomfortable with the phrase Tzelem Elohim.
I'm not uncomfortable with it. I think it's beautiful. It's heretical. It's just, it's quasi-heretical. I put that in quote. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. But you said that it kind of means we're a part of God.
Right.
That's only if you treat the phrase as smichut. But there are ample ways in which the word Elohim is used to mean great, divine. So man is created in a divine image, not in the image of God, but in divine image, higher than all the animals, as you just said.
But if it's divine, why is it not God?
Because the word divine is used in English that way also. It means higher. It means above average.
I mean, Elohim is a god of nature more, right?
Yeah, have Elohim in other places in correct. The Torah that Elohim doesn't mean God. It
right,
means
by the Holy
on
Egyptian
a higher
story.
Level. So that works.
Right. The Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. God wants to make his Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei name known. Right. Elohim is the more natural name. Okay. Could be. I don't know. I mean, the way the Gemara understands that we have to copy God. The Yud Gimel Midot, the same way God is merciful, we should be merciful. In other words, we have to emulate God.
So that doesn't mean we're part. That means we should copy God. Okay. We are capable of doing those things, which
right.
lower
but the fact
forms
that we can create. That's what Rav Soloveitchik says. What's the message of the Torah, the first opening message of the Torah? We emulate God. What's the highest way to emulate God? To create. That we can bring a human being into this world. That's exactly what God did. And why does Beit Hillel say you have to have a son and a daughter? Because that's God created a man and a woman. We're emulating God. And that's why the first mitzvah is Purur Vuur. As Rav Soloveitchik would say, the first mandate of a Jew is to emulate God. So, you know, I don't know. I think it's more semantics that we are discussing. Yes, I used the phrase.
It is semantics, but it's semantics that dissolves that issue that you said.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Anything else?
Excuse me.
Yes, yeah. Debbie.
I would also say that in Perek Chet and Tehillim, it says, "Vatechasreyu ma'at me Elokim."
Which means we're just under.
Right, that we're just under, but that
just
we
under.
Have
right. Ma'at. Ma'at.
That's right.
Right.
We're in a divine image.
So we're just debating how we interpret. So I say, Mamelis, we're like God. And you're saying, no, it means we're not. Okay, that's just to me, semantics. I said, we're almost like God. It's quasi heretical.
We are almost like God. We are divine, but we're not God.
That's Ma'at means we're very little. We're almost God.
Okay. Well, you could take it either way.
I mean, I also take it in the way how we have to treat other human beings. In other words,
they're part of God also.
Right. That's part of the mandate. The mitzvah bein adam lechaviro, mitzvah bein adam lekum. The way you treat a human being reflects your true belief in God. I mean,
exactly.
We'll get there a little bit later, I hope. Deb, you had something you wanted to say?
God-like. Yeah. The phrase fits in very well with modern cosmology because modern cosmology believes that God created at the Big Bang particles, subatomic particles, which were used to create atoms, which were all basically dark matter because they didn't give off light. And then gravity condensed everything until nuclear fusion produced the stars. So actually light is made out of the dark matter.
Okay, my physics is not good enough, even though my son's doing a PhD in physics, but that's not my department, but thank you. Yes, listen, I'm not from the school I mentioned. I'm not from the school that we have to reconcile science and creation. The Torah is not a book of science. It doesn't bother me that the vegetation was created before the sun. I don't care. The Torah is not a science book. If you believe the Torah is a science book, so it's not so simple. Schroeder does believe the Torah can be reconciled. I believe that's his whole theory. Genesis and Big Bang. You're reconciling, you know, this it refers to this, this refers to that. What's his name? Aviezer from Bar Ilan University also has in the beginning. There's this whole genre of literature that we have to reconcile the story of creation with science. And I'm with Rabbi Slifkin as, you know, champion. They don't have to be reconciled at all. They're two different genres. When you open up a book, you have to know what you're reading. Are you reading a book? Are you reading prose or poetry? So you have to know when you open up a Torah, you're actually reading poetry. The famous Benetziv, we've mentioned many times, the Torah is a Shira. The entire Torah is a poem. And therefore, it has multiple interpretations and reinterpreted and things are missing and written in weird ways. You know, the entire Torah is a poem. And then you have to know you're not reading a history book either. The history doesn't have to drive. It doesn't have to. It's not that the Torah writes necessarily something false, but it doesn't like bother me, you know, like, so how did that work? Like if they're like how long they were in Egypt. That was my Dvar Torah a few weeks ago. Were they in Egypt 210 years before 30 years? I don't really care. The Torah has both. Obviously, it was only one. Obviously, you can't have been in Egypt 210 years and 430. The Pasuk in Chumash says they're there 430 years. That's probably how long they were there. All this rabbinic idea is 210 years and how does the four generations work? This is all very nice, but the Torah is not teaching history. The Torah is teaching ideas. So like I said, the Torah is teaching an idea of 210 years and 430 years. Okay, what the difference is, that not for now, but I always like the example I always like to give. Who sold Yosef, the brothers or the Midianites? Who cares? I mean, no, who cares? The Torah cares. The Torah wants you to read it both ways. You don't think Rashi, when he says the brother was aware that you could easily interpret it, it's not the brothers, and the Rashbam who interprets it as the Midianite, he understood you can interpret it as the brothers. The Torah is ambiguous. Rabbi Liebtag was speaking about that last week. That's the way the Torah is. So I'm from the school that I don't care really if the Torah, I don't care. I mean, I don't mean to sound, you know, flippant. I remember, and then with this, then we'll move on. Rev Lichtenstein, many years ago, I remember, I think it was at Stern College. I don't know what, I guess he came to speak in the 80s when I was at YU, and he spoke and he mentioned that, if I remember correctly, scientists had discovered, Rashi quotes, the ark was 11 amot deep in the water. Rashi has this whole calculation, how deep is the ark. So some scientists wrote a paper that it's true. You know, yeah, it proved that Rashi's right based on science. There was all of it. Brother Zin, like, said people got all excited. They didn't get so excited. Like, you know, if we accept Rashi, you know, at face value, we accept Rashi. I don't need the scientists to confirm, but it's not a science book. Torah's not a science book. But that is split. All the problems that people, you know, attack, you know, even evolution, et cetera, it's based on they have a much more fundamentalist and more literal reading of the Bible that I don't think we need. Anyway, that's for another time. Let's move on, unless somebody has a quick comment on this. Let's move on back to Shema. What I said would start off, what's missing in Shema? Okay. And, all right. We can move on.
Rabbi Kalman? Right.
Yes. Nice to see you. It's almost Shabbos. Thank you.
I know. The alarm just went off. There's 20 minutes.
Okay, got 20 minutes. I appreciate it. Thank you.
So on the relationship between Yetzirah and Bria, in the bracha itself, Asher Yetzarta Adam, Uvaravo nikavim nikavim.
Right. Very good.
That's yesh mi yesh. Uvaravo.
No, so that's an interesting. You know what? I didn't even think of that, which is kind of dumb of me. How could I not think of that? Asher yatzara dam bechachma uvaravo nikavim nikavim. So either the word is not used in an exacting way. I don't know that Chazal always had an exact, you know, they may have, which I don't necessarily want to say. I want to, I don't know. It would, in other words, the, you know what? Based on what I said, now I think it makes sense. The nikamim, nikamim, that's our very physical being. In other words, asher yatzar et ha-adam, ha-adam, right? Adam, ha-adam, asher yatzar et ha-adam, the man, the tzelem Elohim. That's Asher Yatsar. He formed us. Nikavim, Nikavim, that's our animalistic idea. That's Vayivra. When God created man, he created, thank you very much for, I think that fits in beautifully. I hope, you know, I think that makes sense. Right, the Nikavim, Nikavim is Bara Yeshmei Ayin, because that's our physical creation. That's chapter one in Bereshit. And Hadam Asher Yatsar, that's like chapter two in Bereshit, our Tzelemahim. Even though it says Tzelemahim in chapter one, I understand that. But we're assuming the two go together, and it's really first the animalistic side of man. As Rav Soloveitchik says, biologically, we're just, you know, higher form animals. It's what everybody says in evolution. You know, we're nine, I don't know, what are we, 98% the same DNA as a baboon? You know, we're just a little bit, but that little bit, that's all he makes all the difference in the world. So thank you for that, David. Okay. Okay. So we said we're going to, we discussed a couple of weeks ago why the Ten Commandments are not really the misnomer, but that's what everybody uses. So it doesn't bother me so much to say Ten Commandments as long as you know that's not really what it is. The Aseret Hadibrot. So why it's not in the Shema? We said actually it is in the Shema. The Yerushalmi has, goes through, we went through this a couple of weeks ago, which words in the Shema refer to each one of the Aseret Hadibrot. And that's assuming, that's going with the line of reasoning that we've alluded to, but we haven't discussed at great length, that the mitzvah to say Kriyat Shema, we discussed this last week, is a mitzvah really of Talmud Torah. It's not really, and that's what it sounds like. V'shinantan levanecha v'dibarta bam. It's talking about learning. Whether there's a, and perhaps the saying of Shema, as Shema is only a rabbinic commandment. But we have this Aseret Hadibrot, and I mentioned when I go once a year to daven at the Moroccan shul a couple blocks from my house, so I always go, I tend to go there on Shmini Atzeret at night. That's my minhag, you know, yantiv, just once a year to visit a local Sephardic shul, a real Sephardic shul. So they have in the Siddur the words, you know, by the Shema, you see the Aseret Hadibrot, you know, this word is this, lo tachmod, etc. So, okay, so, but we said the basic reason people took, would take the Aseret Hadibrot too seriously, and that's why, did everybody stand in shul last week? There was one person in our shul who did not stand. I don't know, he's not Sephardic, I don't know that he's a big Rambam fan, yes, but I assume it's based on that. That's a whole other question. By the way, if you're in a, let's say you're an Ashkenazi and you're invited to a bar mitzvah, the Spanish Portuguese shul, whatever, on Parshat Yitro, and everybody sits for the Aseret Hadibrot. You can't stand. You're not allowed to. What do you mean you're a minhag? There, according to the Rambam, there's no such thing as a personal minhag. They're only communal minhagim. Okay, we generally don't go by that necessarily. What do you mean you're a minhag? Who cares what your minhag is? You don't do that in a shul. So maybe if you're in a shul where nobody cares, half are sitting, half are standing. Okay, but in a lot of shuls, they really care. Royers, you know, everybody has to wear a talisman board. There's certain minhagim that is accepted by the community. If you're a guest, you cannot follow your own minhag. That's not right. As a matter of fact, Rav Schechter told us that there was a time when I served as a rabbi, I used to stand for Kriyas HaTorah. And I don't do that anymore, very, very rarely. Rav Soloveitchik has a whole idea. When you stand for Kriyas HaTorah, it's not just learning Torah in public. Why do we read the Torah? Basically, it's a mitzvah to have public Torah learning. We read the Torah to the whole public. But Soloveitchik basically explains if you stand, it's a reenactment of Har Sinai. It's not, and that's what we do. The Aseret Hadibrot, the Tam Elyon is read as Aseret Hadibrot, not as a pasuk. Each dibra is sort of its own pasuk. That's what Tam Elyon means. So when we read it, we're reenacting Har Sinai, and therefore everybody stands. It makes a lot of sense. So the Maram of Rutenberg introduced this custom to stand for Kriyat HaTorah. You see, I go to shuls, you know, yeshiva boys, whatever, people stand and so for the whole Torah reading. Okay, very nice. And that's, in a sense, a higher level of Kriyat HaTorah. But if the Rav Shechter, if the rabbi is sitting, you can't stand. You're not allowed to stand in a shul if the rabbi sits. That's the rabbi is 85 years old and he says, I would like to stand. I can't stand. He makes an announcement, but you're not allowed to be firmer than the rabbi. Go to a different shul. If you don't like, I mean that in all seriousness. This is a big issue people have. You know, everybody does their own thing. And what does the rabbi know? You know, the rabbi's, some who knows what. If that's what you think of the rabbi, you can't daven in this shul. The rabbi doesn't have to be your posek. You don't have to ask your shilas to the rabbi of the shul you daven at. That I don't think you have to do. Maybe you should. I know it's an interesting question, but you can't in the shul do anything that, even though it's not forbidden, it's not right. It doesn't, if the rabbi sits for the Chazar HaShatz, you should sit for the Chazar HaShatz. Don't have to be firmer than rabbi. You don't like it? Go to another shul. Anyways, that's just an
important. You have to stand. If the rabbi stands for Chazar HaShatz, does that mean everybody in the Kehillah has to stand for Chazar
HaShatz? No, I don't think so. No, because I think there's another, because that's an extra stringency, so to speak. So it's understood the rabbi should be firmer than everybody. I mean, there is something that, you know, this is a fascinating question, the American rabbinate, and how close should a rabbi be to his congregants. No, we expect the rabbi to be machmir. Like, it's a famous thing there. Who should, I mean, it's not true anymore, I guess I would say, unfortunately, but the common, like Rav Henkin said, what everybody said, the Mishnah Berurah is not for average people. Then the regular people shouldn't use the Mishnah Berurah. They should use the Aruch HaShulchan. Aruch HaShulchan was a shul rabbi. He's a community rabbi who's much more lenient than Mishnah Berurah. So, sitting in an ivory tower, it's a tzaddik. When a tzaddik writes a halakha book, so he's worried about every little thing. So this view here, you know, it's like this, but the Eliyahu Rabbah says this, so maybe we should be machmir. It's very nice. If you learn in yeshiva, that's very nice. But normal people, for regular people, use the Aruch HaShulchan. That's what all the rabbanim said. That's today the Mishnah Berurah has taken over. I don't know. There's a chumra in the Mishnah Berurah. I think I mentioned where Rav Schechter told us on putting, although I can't find this in the Mishnah Berurah. I don't think I misheard it, but it could be that to wear your tzitzis out. So it says only a Yirei Elohim. Wearing tzitzis out is a problem of yuhara, to show off. We're not allowed to show off our mitzvah. That's also, you stand, oh, I'm very pious, I stand. Oh, and look, everybody looks at me, that's yuhara. We're not allowed to wear tefillin on. We're not allowed to do things that make us look more religious than we are. If you are that religious, if you're Rav Avigdor Nebenzahl, you can wear tefillin all day, but we're not Rav Avigdor Nebenzahl. So, you have to know what level you're at. So he says a Yirei Shemaim should wear tzitzis out. Normal people don't wear their tzitzis out. So Rav Schechter said when he was a kid, he was taught a Yirei Shemaim. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Soloveitchik, they wear their tzitzis out. But now every Tom, Dick, and Harry thinks he's a Yirei Shemaim, wears its tzitzis out. You should know, there's a certain level. Anyway, that's so it is. If the rabbi is not standing, so if you're in a Sephardic shul, it's forbidden, and everybody is sitting, it's forbidden for you to stand. That would be a terrible thing. It's not the minhag of the shul. Where do you think you are? Do your own thing. You have to respect minhagim. Yes, Yocheved.
Yeah, so regarding this, what you just said about the tzitzis out, so I've been thinking about it, and I feel like in today's young generation, it's so hard for kids to really relate to Judaism, especially when they're exposed to the secular world. So if wearing their tzitzis out is part of what makes them proud to be Jewish,
I totally hear that. Yeah, I'm not issuing any tzak halacha. I agree, issues are often working, but there may be a compelling reason. That's an excellent point. It reminds me, I've often would quote that his first cousin, I think, is having a bar mitzvah the Shabbos. When I was in chat, he now lives in Israel. Somebody, he was the star of the basketball team. He actually taught in chat for a while. He said it was the star of the basketball team. It was a from guy. And as I'm sure you know, where I teach at chat, most of the kids are not from. There is an element of from kids, but a small element. So he was the star of the basketball team, and he wore his tzitzis out. And I thought that was really good, because because if he was, he's a cool guy, and he's wearing tzitzis. I think that's, yes, there's 100%, and if you influence others, there are all kinds of reasons. You know, when somebody sees who he's playing basketball with his tzitzis on, or he gets a special t-shirt, with the four corners, so he can wear tzitzis. Okay, there is something to that, but sometimes not. You can't paskin. This is why you need a local rabbi. This cannot be written in the Mishnah Berurah or the Aruch Shulchan, you and your local rabbi, your family, you have to know yourself. Yeah, you know what this situation is. Like, you can't give a, you never, yes. Anyways, okay. Enough. I was just mentioning the stand. So the Aseret HaDibra, we were afraid. The Aseret HaDibra. That's what we discussed. People would say, oh, that's the main part of the Torah. And therefore, we want to downplay it. And therefore, we have to sit. That's what the Rambam said. But therefore, we cannot say it in our tumbling every day. So now I said I would talk up the second thing the Talmud wanted to say, or what we're supposed to say in Shema, or we thought we might say in Shema, but we can't do that anymore. And that is, it's an amazing Mara, Balak. Bill, our good friends, Balak and Bilam, you know? So they wanted to put him into the Shema. So let's take a look at the Gemara here. Let's just do a little bit of, here we go. Bracha 12b. Okay. Amar Rav Avahu ben Zutarti. Amar Rav Yehuda bar Zvidi. Bikshu. They wanted to. Remember, this follows the Gemara. They wanted to put in the Aseret HaDibrot. It's in the Bikshu. It's not right up. Bikshu likvua parshat Balak b'kriyat Shema. Wow. They wanted to put in Balak. Read Parshat Balak in Kriyat Shema. Umifnei ma'alokavu. So why not? So if they wanted to, who stopped them? Unbelievable. Mifnei Torah Chatzibur. Because of the, you know what, it would add 5 extra minutes. Can you imagine reading with that more than 5 minutes? The question is, what do they mean by Parshat Balak? But let's say the 3 times he tries to bless the people, tries to curse and he blesses people. You're going to put in Parshat Balak. Oh my God. Davening's long enough already. So, because of the, what do they say? Encumbrance. Tircha. I don't know how to translate that in English. Okay. Encumbrance. I don't know. There has to be like a, it's a
inconvenience.
Pain.
Inconvenience.
Okay. So, okay, so why don't I stop here, and then we are going to spend a few minutes talking about Tircha Desibur. We'll discuss what is it about Parsha Balak that they wanted to put in. But there's something very interesting. The rabbis liked Balak, Bilam, Matovu. In other words, it's like we walk into Shul, Taka, we do say part of Parsha Balak. I mean, I don't know many people who actually do this, but, you know, that's the first thing in the Siddur. You walk in Shul, Matovu, Alecha Yaakov, Mishkanot Tacha Yisrael. That comes from Balak, Bilam. You know, so and lo kam bi Yisrael kemoshe od. There was nobody bi Yisrael. There was no prophet in Israel like Moshe, but there was a prophet outside of Israel who's as great as Moshe. It's also quasi heretical, like kind of against the 13 principles of the Rambam almost. There is this notion that Bilam was on a level, at least potentially or maybe actually, on the level of Moshe. The Gemara says that he was trying to time God's anger, because God gets angry like one, whatever it is, a very small thing. We did the Gemara once in Brechot. You know, for a hundredth of a second, God gets angry. But if you can curse the Jewish people in that moment, like Lahavdil, they say the football player on the Bills, he was at the Super Bowl, I think, that what's his name? Hamlin or something? I wasn't watching the game, but he got, you know, a heart attack. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. The football player, they canceled the game, and he almost died on the field. And apparently the doctors say there's the way the heart works. There's like a 1/120th of a second. Like there's this one moment, like 1 out of 100,000. And if your heart takes a thing at that exact second, it's very dangerous. In other words, the play wasn't any more dangerous than a million other plays that happened in an NFL season. So Labdil, like, it's the same thing. It's the right moment. There's certain moments that are ripe for certain things. So the Gemara says there's a moment that God gets really angry, and that's what Bilam was trying to do. There's something special. So it's very interesting. The Gemara, there's something that attracted the rabbis in a certain sense. Bilam is great. He can be like Moshe Rabbeinu. He can also almost convince God the same way Moshe convinced God to save the Jewish people, not to destroy them after the sin of the golden calf, so to speak, whatever that means exactly. So to Balak, Bilam can control God on a certain level, God forbid, or whatever. And you know, he was a great prophet. I think there's something for outsiders, you know, like, we hear, you know, when an outsider prays us, but we'll leave that aside for a second. And clearly they wanted to put it into the Shema, and they didn't put in the Shema. Maybe I'll finish that, and then I'll come back to Tircha Ditzibur.
Rabbi Hellman, it's like, yeah, Kryptonite. You know, you get closer to it. It's better that it's out in the open don't think for a minute Bilam was a tzaddik. You know, bring it out to the people. So it's important.
Right, but you know, it's pretty amazing that we use his words. Ma tovu alecha. It's such beautiful. It is beautiful words. I mean, you know, Bilam in many ways is like a tragic figure. He could have been somebody who saw he did see the beauty of the Jewish people. Why did he have to give Balak the advice to get the Midianite woman to entice the man? I mean, that's how we understood it, that, you know, he failed in his ability to curse, but go and seduce the people that he succeeded at. It's, in other words, he could have been great. I think that's what the rabbi was saying. He could have been like a Moshe. He really could have been. There would have been a parallel Moshe in the non-Jewish world, and he blew it. Yeah, I think your point is correct, but we still take part of what he said, because there's something, you know, something beautiful to Matovu. So let's just quickly go through this and my time out. What's so great about Balak that you want to put it in? Because he says, he begins his praise of the Jewish people, the God who took them out of Egypt. Okay, there are lots of things in the Torah. We'll come back to this. I won't dwell on it. Now, Lema Parshat Ribi. What about interest? God took us out of Egypt, so we shouldn't charge interest to people. That's also said, or Mishkalot. These are chapter 19 in Vayikra. The Parshat of Honest Weights, it also says Egypt, much shorter, much, much shorter. So the Gemara says, no, Mishunichti by Karach Shachav Kari. The Jewish people are like a lion. I wrote a whole article about this, like a lion, courage. You know, we have to worship God. Hikaber Kari, you wake up like an Ari in the morning. So, you know, this is like the greatness of the Jewish people, where those who, here, they quote in English, those who bless you are blessed, those who curse you are cursed. Karak ad shachav, v'shachvucha uvkumecha, right? Mi'ikimenu. So that's the, probably, you know, that's what they're saying. God, v'shachvucha uvkumecha. Talk about the greatness of the Jewish people, the greatness of God. So where it says, okay, that's a good reason. We can say that. So let's say that verse and nothing else. But too low. No, we can't do that. Kol parsha, not pasuk. You know, the Torah is divided into parshiot. Some parshiot are 2 verses, some are 50 verses, right? The way up the summit, the ptuchan, the stuma. That's how you have to read the Torah. It's very important. Kol parsha to paske Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah, so he put in these breaks. These breaks are meant, as Rashi said, to review what you just learned. Paskinim, we can't stop in the middle of a thought. Every parsha has its own theme. That's a fascinating way nobody does this, how to learn Chumash. I know Rabbi Liebtag, he has this whole thing. Go through, read Bereshit as the parsha. It's amazing. Just seeing where the breaks are, it's an astounding idea. Mention like Parsha Vayetze, one Parsha, no Parsha breaks. Lord Yaakov Avinu running away from Esav, coming to the well, meeting Rachel, going to Laban's house, working for 7 years, working for another 7 years, being tricked. That's all one story. 11 kids, bang, 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 one story. And then Bereshit every day, it's its own, you have to stop. It's not one story of creation. It's 6 levels of creation. There's a Parsha break. But so you're not allowed to stop in the middle of a Parsha break. So we cannot pick up a Pasuk and just say it. The low Pasuk Moshe Rabbeinu. So we're stuck. We can't say Parshat Balak. Okay. And then the Gemara wants to why about Tzitzit. So we'll come back to some of this, but I want to discuss for a few minutes this topic that's an ignored topic today, tircha de tzibura, causing pain and encumbrance. What's the word you said? Somebody, being a nuisance to the community. Tircha de tzibura. So somehow I'm going to.
Inconvenience.
An inconvenience. Yes. It's a pain. And then who wants this? Tircha de tzibura. So I just want to go over a few examples of tircha de tzibura mentioned in the Gemara. And then I want to show you an amazing tshuva of Rav Yaakov Emden. It's like, I love it, but, unfortunately nobody follows it. Okay. So, what examples do you know of, tircha de tzibura, things you're not allowed to do? It's inconvenient. Nobody wants to sit there for 3 hours in shul. They want to go home. I just saw this year, Lahavdil, Major League Baseball is putting a pitch clock on the pitchers. I just saw they just passed. They did in the minor leagues. So pitchers have 20 seconds if somebody's on base, I think, and 15 seconds if nobody's on base to pitch. And they said in the minor leagues, it sped up the game by half an hour, right? They complain baseball doesn't work. It's too sedentary. No, I mean, that's why rabbis like baseball. It can think about it. It's not like football where you're killing each other. Baseball, you know, thinking, do you do a hit and run? Do you do this? But they want to speed up the game because not enough young people are interested in baseball. It's too old fashioned. So one of the ways to speed up the game, they're going to put in a pitch clock. And if the pitcher doesn't pitch, it's a ball. And if the batter's not in the batter's box, a strike. Great. So anyways, so, that's it. At Tircha de Tzibura. You can't go to, nobody wants to sit at Yankee Stadium for 3 hours. They want to get out in 2.5 hours. Okay. I don't know. Okay. So it's the same thing in shul. So what are some of the things we don't do because of Tircha de Tzibura? Anybody want to throw out some ideas? Maybe you'll make up your own. And again, I will say, just like I said before, it's a little subjective. And in every community, there are certain things the Gemara says is real. And then there are certain things that depend. And certain people like a 4-hour davening. That's great. That's not a tircha de tzibura. That's your tzibur. But it's when you're doing something out of the ordinary. The tzibur doesn't accept it. But so what are some of the things that we don't allow because of tircha de tzibura?
Mishabeiros.
Oh, well, that's the one I'm going to get to. Yeah. That's the real one. But let's talk about, they didn't have a Misha Berach in the Gemara. That's a later invention. You're not allowed to make a Misha Berach. How can you make a Misha Berach? You're not allowed to, just because I did a mitzvah. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, but that's, so that's probably the most famous one. I don't think I
should have to start. To start Chazaras HaShatz with the Chazan.
Yeah, good. That's one. If the chazan forgets Yalaviyavo, the chazan forgets Yalaviyavo. So everybody knows that it's not whatever. Maybe it's not 100% true, but we were all taught if you get Yalaviyavo, you have to repeat the entire Shemoneh Esrei. So if the chazan forgot Yalaviyavo, so you got to wait an extra 5 minutes for him to say Shemoneh Esrei. You say no. When he repeats the Shemoneh Esrei, he'll say Yalaviyavo. That's good enough. He won't say, he won't have fulfilled the mitzvah of the silent Shemoneh Esrei today. So when a chazan makes a mistake, he doesn't go back. He just corrects that mistake in when he repeats the Shemoneh Esrei. Good. That's one. I think the most famous one, I think, is on Yom Kippur. The Mishnah in Yuma describes the whole service in the temple. And one of the things we did, you know, we don't read the Torah very often. I mean, it's a rabbinic thing, you know, Talmud Torah. We read the Torah every week. But in the time of the Mishnah, you know, they didn't read it. Well, that's when it started. But the Gemara, they read the Torah in Yom Kippur in the Beit HaMikdash. The Kohen Gadol, after he finished all his work, the Kohen Gadol, they would take out of the Torah and they would read Achrei Mot. That's what we do. That's where the story of Yom Kippur. Then he would read Emor, which we don't do. That's the chapter 23 that we read on all the holidays. So the Kohen Gadol, that's very close. Achrei Mot, Kedoshim Emor. So it takes half a second to scroll the Torah from Achrei Mot to Emor. And then he reads Parshat Pinchas, the Maftir, the Korban Asa of Yom Kippur. But the Gemara says, no, he puts down the Torah and he says, Yoter Mimashe Kariti Katukan, there's more here than what's written. Then I didn't read everything here. And then he reads Pinchas Baal Peh. Now, remember, in the time of the Gemara, maybe today a little bit, it's forbidden to quote a pasuk by heart. I mean, whatever, we'll have to talk another time. What's our permission? We all do that. But in the time of the Gemara says, Dvarim Shebichtav, Iyatara Shalom Ram Baal Peh. If so, you're not, the written Torah and the oral Torah are two distinct genres of Torah. You can't mix them up. You're not allowed to write down the oral Torah. We had no choice. We had to break the Torah. Eit Lasot Hashem. Torah would have been forgotten. We had to nullify Torah. It was really wrong, but we had no choice. The lesser of two evils. So we wrote down the oral law. And the written law, you can't say orally. You have to do it. So you're not allowed to quote a pasuk in Chumash without having a Chumash. Some actually say because of Tircha de Tzibura, when the rabbi's giving a shir, right? Every time he quotes a pasuk, he's going to open up the Chumash and flip through a Tircha de Tzibura. We allow him to quote it without it. Interesting. But, so the Kohen Gadol would say, he would read Balocha from Balocha, read Parsha Pinchas. He would read off by heart. Because it's take 3 minutes to scroll the Torah. It's not so far either, but it's a little far. It's a little far to scroll the Torah from Achrei Mot and Emor to Pinchas takes 2.5 minutes, and that's a big waste of time. So the Kohen Gadol read it out loud. So that's amazing. That's in the Mishnah. And you have to understand, I'm telling you, it's sort of prohibited. On a certain level, it's prohibited for the Kohen Gadol to read it. In the time of the Beit HaMikdash, they were strict on these laws. So yet, because of Tircha D'Tzibur, we allowed it. There was, I didn't see it now, but I remember years ago, and I'm sorry I didn't look it up now, but when, you know, how we blow shofar had a big evolution, you know, because really it wasn't until the 3rd century, like we don't know what a trua is. So the Gemara gives 3 possibilities. A trua is either a trua, it's either a shvarim, or it's a shvarim trua. So we do all 3. And you have to do it 3 times, but, and we do it in Chazar Hashat. So I'm pretty sure I remember the minag of the Gaonim during the 7th to the 11th century, Sura Pumpadita, the great Yeshivot. So there were different customs. What do you do with Malchiyot, Shofarot, and Malchiyot, Zichronot, and Shofarot? So our custom is we do all of them. We do Tashrat, Tashat, Tarat. We do Shvarim Trua, Shvarim and Shrua. So we do all 3 possibilities. But I think the Gaonim didn't do that. They did Shvarim Trua by Malchiyot and Shvarim by Zichronot and Trua by at Shofarot. I have to look up where, but I remember seeing said, why not do the way we do it? Tircha D'Tzibura. Amazing. Takes an extra 4 seconds, to 8 seconds to blow the shofar. Tircha D'Tzibura. Now, I assume they didn't say the piyutim we all say, because that's a bigger Tircha D'Tzibur, maybe. I don't know, whatever. I mean, I love them. I think they're beautiful. But it's fascinating that the Gaonim, and that the Poskim all points out, Tircha D'Tzibur doesn't mean that has to take a half an hour. It can take 10 seconds, any time that's wasted. The other biblical proof, I read the proof in the Mishnah. The biblical proof is from last week's, like, Parsha, of course. What did Yitro yell at Moshe for? You're making people wait. No justice, delay justice. What's it? That's not fair. That's also a Tircha D'Tzibur. A doctor who makes people wait. Everybody in Toronto knows Dr. Geft, the amazing pediatrician. Everybody knew you never waited 1 second. Nobody ever came late to an appointment and you never had to wait. He arranged his office that nobody waited. And you go to other whatever, you wait for an hour. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. He told you come at 11:20. And you didn't show up at 11:21 because you respected him because he respected you. And it was an amazing thing. But that's Tircha D'Tzibur, make people wait. That's, so you got it in the Chumash already. It's not some rabbinic, whatever idea. But here you have a few examples. Probably that's why we have 2 Sifrei Torah on Yontif, what the Kohen Gadol did to stretch. So what do we do? We take out 2 Sifrei Torah. There's no halacha. You have to have 2 Sefer Torahs on Yontif. Nothing about 2 Sefer Torahs. It's just because the Torah reading is so far. So it's interesting. Tomorrow, see, they will take out 2 Sifrei Torah, but they don't really have to. I don't want to, because Mishpatim is going to end Parshat Shkalim tomorrow. Purim's around the corner. So we read Kitisa. That's just one. That's 2 parshiot over. It's during the Kaddish, they could say. But I'm saying we take a 2 Sefer Torah, but it's not a halacha in 2 Sefer Torah. It's a halacha that we don't want to make people wait. So, of course, if sometimes they take out the Torah and the Gabbai hasn't rolled it, that you might as well use the one and same Sefer Torah. There's no mitzvah to take out a second Sefer Torah if it's not rolled. Sometimes they take it, it's not rolled, it's further away from the first one. Rav Moshe Feinstein has as a Chuba. You know, you ever been to shul? They take out the wrong Sefer Torah. They take out from the Sefer Torah, it's in the first weeks of the year. So your Parshat Lech Lecha. And they took out the Sefer Torah from Parshat Hazinu. You'll sit there for 15 minutes to roll it from Hazinu to Lech Lecha. So Rav Moshe Feinstein said, you can put back the Sefer Torah and take out another one, right? People, I can't put back a Sefer Torah. Isn't that what most people think? No, I took it out. I can't put it back. Rav Moshe says, no, you can put it back. You have to wait there for 15 minutes while they roll from Hazinu to Lech Lecha. Okay, if they're rolling from Vayichi to Mishpati, not so bad. Anyway, so that's all Tircha D'Tzibur. The Gemara, of course, then says a rabbi has to be very concerned. Can't daven a long Shmon Esrei. Can't daven such a long or he tells the chazan, don't wait for him. When I was in Yeshiva Kotel, we would wait for Rav Hadari during the week, not on Shabbos. We did not wait for him on Shabbos. He davened very long Shmon Esrei, and I assume he, when he started the yeshiva, he told, don't wait for me because it's not fair. And they daven slowly. Believe me, Yeshiva Kotel davens nice and slowly. But they didn't wait for him on Shabbos. They didn't wait on Yom Kippur, even though it was Yom Kippur. I never saw Shimon Esrei so long in my life. But, you know, I could have said it 18 times. But he's 18 years old. You come to Yeshiva, like 40 minutes to say the song Shimon Esrei. But the Rosh Yeshiva took an hour and a half. They didn't wait. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva, when he would daven at home, he would daven nice and slow. You want to daven with kavanah? I mean, sort of the opposite of what we teach people. And maybe you shouldn't publicize it so much, but okay, if you're Rabbi Akiva, fine. Rabbi Akiva, when he would daven at home, the Gemara says he would start in one corner, he'd find him in another corner. He was so intense and his eyes were closed and he's moving around and he's so, he's in another world. That's when he davened at home. But when he came to shul, chick chack, you know, can't wake people. It's not, I assume they were going to wait for him. So these are all things of Tircha Itzibur. So I said, it's already late. Everything always goes late. So let's do the tshuva of the Chacham, not the Chacham Tzvi, right? Yaakov Emden and Misha Berg. So just, you have to see it inside because it's great. Okay. So Rav Yaakov Emden, of course, we won't get it by. It's very easy to remember when your Rav Yaakov Emden died. Anybody know why it's easy to remember when he died? Maybe if you live in Canada, it's not so easy, but even if you live in Canada, it's easy. He died in 1776. Rav Yaakov Emden, 1698, 1776. And of course, he was a very colorful person. Colorful is an understatement. He, I think, wrote one of the first rabbinic autobiographies. He was quite a character. And he is the son of the Chacham Tzvi, which is how he gets the name Yavetz, Tshuvat Yavetz, Yaakov Ben Tzvi. His father was not Sephardic, but he's known as the Chacham Tzvi. I think he served as the rabbi in Amsterdam, and he inherited it from his father and grew on it more, the hatred of Sabbateans. His life's mission was to root out Sabbateanism. And, you know, the whole controversy with Rav Yonatan Leibschitz, accusing him of being a Sabbatean. And like Schneur Lyman, who's the world's expert on this, says, he rooted out Sabbateanism, but he hurt a lot of people on the way. A lot of innocent, like in a war, you know, innocent people get killed on the way. Lots of, it was horrendous. Anyways, but he was quite a colorful character and a tremendous Talmid Chacham, obviously, one of the greats in Jewish history. So here's a tshuva from Rav Yaakov Emden, tshuva Yavetz. I found this, I was not aware of the tshuva till a couple of days ago. I guess last week I became aware of it. Okay. So he's talking about, this is volume, I see on Safari is like great. They even have a lot of the tshuvas here. So he's talking about Minyan HaBakashat B'Shabbat. You shouldn't pray. You shouldn't ask for all these things on Shabbat. So he says, first of all, you're not allowed to daven for a sick person unless God forbid, he got a heart attack on Shabbos. But a person who's just, you know, who's no different on Saturday than he was on Friday, you're not allowed to make, you should not make a Misha Berach. Only if he, mamish, you know, got sick on Shabbos, that's pikuach nefesh. It's interesting that the saying of Misha Berach, Pikuach Nefesh, you could argue on that, but okay. V'chol she'ein bo sakana, and if a person, he has a little cold, he had a kidney replacement, he had a knee replacement surgery, or he donated a kidney. Not that those are not serious, but they're not life-threatening. Baruch Hashem, today, it's not life-threatening. So, yesh lo divtuach b'schut ha-Shabbat. He should merit the Shabbat will protect him. Lo yivakesh. You don't say Rifeinu, you don't make any Misha Berach. Okay, that's, now he quotes, this is amazing. So the Gemara presents a view, why don't we daven the entire Shmon Esrei on Shabbos? So one view is because on Shabbos, we don't say, ask for our personal needs. That's what he's saying. Some say also, second reason, unbelievable, Torah Chatzibur. Amy Palim records got, you know, it's a big tircha. It takes an extra 3 minutes to say the Chazar Hashatz, an extra 2 minutes from the, you know. So we shorten the Shmon Esrei. We're in shul long enough on Shabbos morning. We don't want to make it any longer. Mivnei Torah Chatzibur, We don't daven the Yud Chai Bracha. That's like an amazing thing. We just assume, I assume everybody assumes, because it's, we don't ask for our personal need. That's one reason, but it's also a tircha mitzibura, and that would hurt our onik Shabbos. Mishum dinitztavinu la'aneg ha'shav. We have to enjoy delight in the Shabbos. And you know what? People don't like being in shul today for 3 hours. When I was a kid, I went to shul for 3.5 hours. I didn't always get there on time necessarily, but if I got there on time, my father's a rabbi in a big traditional conservative shul with a chazen and a choir and, speech before the laning and the haftor and a bar mitzvah every week. And the shul took, they started 8:45. They never finished before noon. Sometimes 10 after and 12, 3.5 hours today, they would go to shul for 3.5 hours. It's unheard of. People want an hour and a half. They want to get out of shul. Again, it depends on what tzibur. Some tzibur's are totally fine with that. He's talking now about when you make a misha berach, when you get an aliyah. So you can't even make a Misha Berach for a sick person. How much more so can't you make a Misha Berach for somebody just because they had an aliyah? you do a mitzvah because you do a mitzvah, not to get blessed for doing a mitzvah. But it's also on Shabbos. There's nothing to do with Shabbos. But ein lahem amashe ismoch. They have nothing to rely on. Like, usually rabbis, they can say, it's not really right, but okay, they're relying on this view, they're relying on that. Rabbis, I told you, he was an outlier. They have nothing to rely on. It's forbidden for chazanim. It's interesting. They would pray, Misha, Misha, I don't know what they would do. They do it, to have the nice voice or the person wants it. I got an aliyah. I'm making a kiddush. They'll make a Misha Berach because I'm making a kiddush on Shabbos. Gam yesh bo misum pisuk ma'ot. You're not allowed to do that. Money. You can't ask for money on Shabbos because a lot of shuls, you give an aliyah, they expect you to make a donation. You shouldn't do it. Ela she'en kocheni yafel limchot. What can I do? We don't have the power to protest. This is what Jews have been doing for hundreds of years. It's wrong. What can you do? There's nothing we can do. But Ashrei, blessed, sheyochaz b'ma'oz hadat menafatzulei minagim hagru'im. If you can get rid of these gru'im, evil, bad minagim, blessed is the person who's strong enough to get rid of the minhag to make a misha berach and shul. Wow. That's like mind boggling. So I was hoping, he says that other people will disagree. I don't want to, it's not the only thing, but it's fascinating. At least be aware of such a perspective. So as I mentioned before, I had hoped that in COVID, we learned from the Chagotzi, because during COVID, nobody made Misha Berachs. Matter of fact, nobody had aliyahs. It was great. Laning was like chick-chock in 15 minutes. You lane little parsha. It didn't feel rushed. And they daven in an hour and a half. Today, they daven in 2 hours. Like it's stuff. No, so I was hoping, now that we're back. So the whole world, many things, as we all know, have changed. The fact that we're still having this class, Baruch Hashem, and all the classes that we have, the world, it's different. We're not going back, and that's a good thing. We don't want to go back to all the pre-COVID stuff. So I was hoping, praying that one of the things we'd learn is not to make Misha Berach. What can we do? Didn't happen. So the shuls are back to Misha Berach, and we have a new gabbai in the shul. So I'm arguing with him. Never one Misha Berach. Okay. That's minhag, but to make two, never make two. And I said, if I tell them you give me an aliyah once a year on Simchas Torah, I'm happy, but they sometimes give me aliyah. Never ever make a second Misha Berach for me. One Misha Berach is one too many, but okay. It's nice. We want to bless everybody. So that's what we do. We bless everybody. That's what we do. To get a nice chazan for Musaf. You don't need a Misha Berach in the laning. And it's problematic for all the reasons that he mentioned, including, besides Tircha Deitzibur, it's asking thing for Shabbos. We do mitzvot, not to get reward. Anyways, I see it's late. It's 10:30. It's, have lots of fun So just let's do a very quick review. And, we discussed Yotzer and Borei. And Bore is to create Yesh Me'ayin, something from nothing, and Yotzer is to form it. And we saw that beautiful idea, man has both. Man Vayivra, we say in the Brachot, Yotzer Yatzar Adam B'chokma. And as David Eisen, who had to leave because of Shabbos in Israel, Yotzer Yatzar Adam. God created us from nothing. That's animalistic. But there are Tzelem Elohim, that's Yatzar. That's, then he formed us from, first there was a Briah, Chalulim, Barabo Nikavim, our animalistic portion is Bara, but he was Yotzer, he formed us into Tzelem Elohim. We had only the three times that it says Vayivra and the Chumash, but it's more, and therefore it's Yotzer Or. Because Or, that was an emanation from God. That's what we got into the whole discussion. That was also Rav Yaakov Emden, who I just quoted. That's why I say we quoted him at the beginning and the end. That was Rav Yaakov Emden, who I first saw that idea quoted. He has a famous sitter, the Rav Yaakov Emden sitter. Where, why don't I see it here? I don't know what happened though. Here it is. This is the Rav Yaakov Emden sitter, if anybody has it, right? It says Rav Yaakov Emden, Sitter Beit Yaakov. It's a very, and people don't use it. You see all the small print, but anyways. Okay. And then we discussed Parsha Balak, why Parsha Balak isn't the rabbis liked Balak. Matovu Bilam is could be as great as Moshe, but because of Tircha Ditzibura, we're not going to include him in the Shmon Esrei and in the Shema, and we can't just excerpt one verse because you have to say whole units. You can't split the Torah into two, which is kind of like you can't say what's oral written. There's a form to Torah. And therefore, in part of Tircha Tzibur, even though it was against the rules, the Kohen Gadol really was not allowed to read Parshat Pinchas Baal Peh, but because the importance of Tircha Tzibura, we allowed that, just like we had to allow eventually the writing down of the Mishnah. We had to change the form of the Torah. We don't have that division anymore between Torah Shebiktav and Torah Shebaal Peh that we once did, and we just went through some of the examples of Tircha Tzibura. The Chazan makes a mistake, and the Amidah perhaps on Shabbos, how we blow shofar even, just to add in the extra thing, which we today all do. Our davening is so long, what's an extra 10 seconds? I like it. I like the extra shofar blowing, but whatever. And then, of course, we ended with this wild tshuva of Rav Yaakov Emden, that really he's very much opposed to any Misha Berachs, friendly. It's not, you don't ask for our needs, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, please God, we'll see you all next week. And fight a friend Sunday, as I mentioned, you probably saw I sent last night. Next week, Shuli Mishkan is starting her new series on places in Yerushalayim. And a week from Sunday, Purim's coming up. I just emailed last night. We confirmed about 1:30 in the morning that Rav Amnon Bazak, who's spoken a few times, Yitain Shir B'Ivrit, Achar HaRav Livtag B'Shavu Shabba. Yitain Shir El Purim. That's on February 27th, Rav Bazak, who's a Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva at Har Etzion, will give a Shir in Hebrew. But if you needed me to translate it, probably you can use the hour in better time reading an English book or something. Okay. Rabbi, any other questions, comments? Rabbi, thank you very much. Shabbat Shalom. Rabbi, yeah. Yochavid, you want to say something?
Rabbi Kelmino, Rosie Friedman.
Hi. How are you?
Thank you. I answered the letter you wrote about that official, how you were trying to exonerate. Yes. But I understood the Toronto, the politics needing a Jewish, a person in their corner. I answered you to Torah in Moshe. You'll see it. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. That's what started the resignation of John Tory. No, he, the fundings ain't going to happen. They lost so bad in that election. It was really horrendous. The whole election was about extend. It became the only election issue, 2007, extending funding to all faith-based schools, because in Ontario, the only place in the Western world where one religion gets another doesn't, the United Nations ruled that Canada's in violation of human rights. Either they have to take it away from the Catholics, which is political suicide, obviously that ain't going to happen, or they have to extend it. And that, unfortunately, in Ontario is political suicide too.
You all need him there. No question about it. You needed him. But right now, not to analogize this, but what's going on with Netanyahu, it's not
I don't want to talk about it, but when I wrote him the article, if all politicians would learn from Tory, Who do you think I had in mind?
But I'm saying 100,000 people protesting.
Yes, I would join them if I was in Israel. I would be there. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'd
but
be,
there, are mixed, yes. there are mixed reasons, you know, of course. Why?
No. It's whatever. I think, you know.
Thank you for a beautiful class. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. When I was a kid, I used to think, who cares if the politician sleeps around? Who cares that JFK is doing who knows what? You know, as long as they're good for the common. I realize now. First of all, I guess I matured in my sort of thinking of Torah values, but also it makes a big impact. When you don't have morals in your private life, you're not going to have morals in your public life. And the most important thing about a public leader is his morals, because the world is so complicated. There's so little you can actually change. Like, there's so many factors in our control. So all you can add is your moral, doing what's right. And hopefully it turns out for the best. But once you make political calculation, it's really sad. I've said many times, when you're osik mitzarchei tzibur, I'll just say very quickly, I mean, anybody can leave, but when you're Osek B'tzarchei Tzibur, why do we stress B'emunah? And because whenever you deal in public, you hurt people. That's, you have to hurt people. You're making a budget, so you have to cut. You have to, if I give more to education, less for the military. You have to help Ukraine and more military. So it's got to come out of healthcare. It's got to come from somewhere. So you're always hurting people. That's what a politician does. That's good. That's what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to help people, but he has to do the Shem Shemaim, if he does it, what he thinks is best. Once you do it because it's good for politics and all the other reasons people do things, oy vai voy, then you are going to, you have to suffer for all the harm you caused. Because I didn't cause harm for doing good. I caused millions of people harm because it was good for my reelection campaign. It's really scary. I don't know who can go into politics, but that's why Rav Soloveitchik, politics is kulo sheker. And I don't think I should say it online, but fill in the blank is a great politician. Politics is kulo sheker, and you know, this one's, there's a great politician. But whatever, it's really hard. It's a tremendous responsibility. And that's why religion, we've mentioned many times, Jonathan Sachs, he mixes religion and politics, you get bad politics and worse religion. And, you know, it's a real chilul Hashem to see what goes on. I mean, the past law, I'm sorry, now that the shiur is over, I can be a little bit more personal opinion. To pass special laws so a criminal, twice convicted, can become a cabinet minister with a peak on his head. What a chilul Hashem. What a chilul Hashem. And I'm sorry if you disagree with me. You can Rabbi? Disagree with me, it's fine. Yes.
I'm trying to resist because I have somewhat different views, but I heard one of my favorite people in the world, Yoram Gaon. I listen to him every Friday because that's just whoever knows. And he had the most deep and simple message. He said, no one's going to win this.
Right. It's terrible. Herzog is correct. It's not for everybody. This is terrible.
Wait a minute. But because you're talking a lot about the right and what they're doing wrong. The only way to do it is that everybody should not be completely happy and find a middle.
Of course. That's what Herzog's trying to do. Yeah, I agree. Listen, peace. Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai gave up Yerushalayim for peace with the Romans. It's terrible. The fighting of the Jews is terrible. It's terrible.
Yeah, but we don't make
compromise. Everybody has to compromise. I agree.
Okay. Agree. Okay. Yeah. All right.
I don't want to get into the pod. This is
neither
this
do Torah I.
Thing, but I do think no. I want to talk on a moral level. I think there's something we want leaders. That's why what I was writing about John Torah.
I don't know about that.
He resigned because he had an affair.
Okay, but then everybody has to resign. There's not one politician who shouldn't. Come on. But Trudeau should resign five. I don't. You know, that's ridiculous.
Okay.
We'll
cut this off on the tape. We won't let this go on. And anyways, this is the non-official part.
But I think if more people in public like Herzog on both sides and don't say, let's kill the prime minister.
I don't hear
a lot of people on that. We have to all say.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. They have to sit in a room and work this out. And 100%, yes. All I was pointing out is, the most important quality in a leader is his moral leadership. And you should ask, are the leaders we have, are they the best moral leaders? But the problem is the system doesn't allow good people to go. It's very hard to remain a good person.
Yeah.
The system is so dirty,
yes,
not singing and talking terrible things and disagreeing. It's a terrible system. Like Churchill said, democracy is the worst system around, just better than all the other ones. So I don't want a monarchy. I don't know what I want. A benign. You know. Anyway. Okay, let's talk about something else. Shabbos, Parshas Mishpatim. Yes, you're smart.
You know what he said about kitchen, taking a kitchen. When I lived in Toronto, when Rabbi Sacknowitz was showing the chat.
Right, sure.
And Rabbi Sacknowitz said the same thing about kitchen. He said about putting your colors over your head. He used to say, if you're not really that plump, don't put your colors over.
Yeah, for sure. Don't put your, you're correct. In Frankfurt, only Shimshon Raphael Hirsch was allowed to put his talus over his head. That was considered Yuhara. Who are you? Bick Knacker, put your talus over.
I was with my dad in Newark, Switzerland, in the very front. And when he went up to the door, they came to put his talus over his head. And that's the only time that I ever saw my father do it. He was to do it.
Yeah, listen, that's a today it's much more common. People put their talus over their head. Everybody should do whatever they feel is. But you're right. There was a time where it's in it. I would say the same thing. If the rabbi of the shul, just like if the rabbi is not standing, I would say if the rabbi doesn't put the talus over his head, you shouldn't put your talus over it. That's what I would think. Probably most people think I'm nuts. But, I don't think. You know, look, people don't think that way, but I think there's something. Like I mentioned, in Frankfurt and Shimshon Raphael Hirsch's shul, only Shimshon Raphael Hirsch was allowed to put the talus over it. That was considered an extra act of piety. And then when you put on your talus, you put it over your head for 2 seconds. But then when you daven, okay, if whatever people want. All right. Any other comments that are going to get me into trouble?
I kind of think that people compartmentalize things so that a person could be very moral in every area, but just when it comes to things like affairs, they have to sweeten. Right. I would rather have someone who is moral in 90% of the areas than someone who's on the
Right. I totally hear that. Believe me, lots of people say John Tory should not resign. I hear the argument, but once he announced right away he's resigning, and I if you read the article, you don't have to read the article I sent out last night about
it. I read it already.
Right. So I said, because he resigned, I want him as the mayor, you know, like that's the type of mayor you want, someone who would resign for having an affair. But,
also in Israel.
Yes, I
would rather have someone who's moral in 80% of the areas.
Than in 50%. I agree. Exactly. Of course, I agree. The question is, where do you draw that? Right. I walked into shul this morning and somebody started telling me, well, you know, people hate Trump and blah, blah, blah. They think he's a mushka, the terrible, but he did the Abraham Accords. Who cares that he was sleeping around that? And JFK, everybody knows. I mean, this life is complicated. I'm not here to judge anybody. I was just trying to write what I thought, but I think we have, want to get moral leaders. What can I tell you? And it's hard. It's hard. Our leaders, I think it's a powerful message what he did. And I think halavai more people would take that into consideration. And, I think, listen, it's sad. People who are from Toronto know who John Tory is. It's very sad. They can see the career he's had and what he's done. And he really is a moderate, and he reconciles people. He brings people together. That's really what he specializes in. And it's very sad to see that happen. It's very sad with his family, whatever, you know, it's, what can I say? All right, let's talk about good things. Parshat HaShavu, Eileh Mishpatim, lots of mitzvot, wonderful Parsha. Lots of our civil life. And okay, everybody have a wonderful Shabbat, and we look forward to seeing you soon, and invite a friend. Okay, thank you very much. Shabbat Shalom.
Rabbi Kelman?
Yeah.
Rabbi Kelman?
Yes.
Just regarding the Yavetz Siddur. So I grew up, my father, that was his Siddur. Oh. He used the Rav Yaakov Emden Siddur, and the Seder night, Pesach, he would clean it off and cover it with tinfoil, and he did the Seder from that Seder. So
Yeah, I don't use it.
A few people.
Yeah, I don't know how popular. I imagine not too many people today use it. But Rav Yaakov Emden owned a printing press, so it was very easy. He that helped him the Eifschitz battle. He would just print out his attacks and read a lot of books. Yeah, he whatever. But anyways, yeah, he was a really one of the more colorful people in Jewish history. You know, quite a personality. I mean, obviously no one ever met him, but when you read about him, wow. And he has some, I'll tell you just, and then I got to go. One amazing tshuva he has, just to show you how wild. He says, if somebody commits adultery, let's say, if somebody does a sin that they're, get a death penalty, they can commit suicide. We don't have a Beit Din, but if they want to, it's like a midat chasidut. It's like an act of piety. They should have been killed, but we don't have a Beit Din. I mean, so it's pretty wild. So it's okay to commit suicide. So obviously nobody accepts that view, but that he could write such a thing is like wild, you know. So that's just one aspect of, I just throw that out as a, like a Ripley's believe it or not, you know, tshuva that he has. Okay, everybody. I can't believe people are still here. Thank you very much. Got to get ready for Shabbos, I hope. And weeks are getting longer, so I guess that's why you can stay longer. Okay, have a great Shabbos, everybody. Be well.
Thank you.
Unless you discovered a way to change.